The Red Swan. Ojibwe, the youngest of three brothers, was out hunting one day when he caught sight of a bear. According to a family agreement, the bear was not his to kill. It was reserved for his older, more experienced brothers. Hesitating for a moment as if to test his own daring, he found that he felt no fear within his breast, but rather a surge of defiance. Boldly, he claimed the bear for himself, and taking careful aim with his sure and steady arm, felled it with one shot. Suddenly, just as the bear was hit, a reddish glow brightened the surrounding air. Ojibwe rubbed his eyes, thinking it must be an illusion, but the red glow persisted. Off in the distance, he heard a sound like a human voice, yet strangely different from any voice he had ever heard before. He stopped to listen. Again he heard it and felt it calling to him. So strongly did it lure him that in his eagerness to follow it, he forgot the bear he had slain only a few moments before. Pushing ahead through the brush, he came out on the shore of a small lake and saw immediately the object that had attracted him. There in the water sat a magnificent red swan, its plumage glittering in the sun. Now and again it made the same curious sound he had heard before. He was within bowshot, and pulling the arrow from the bowstring up to his ear, he took his aim, but the arrow missed. Again and again he shot, till his quiver was empty. Undisturbed, the swan moved around in circles, stretching its long neck and dipping its bill into the water. Ojibwe ran home and got all his own and his brother's arrows and shot them all away. He then stood and gazed at the beautiful bird. Suddenly he remembered his brother saying that in their deceased father's medicine sack were three magic arrows. Off he started without hesitation, so great was his desire to have the swan. At any other time he would have considered it a sacrilege to open his father's sack. Neither of his brothers would have dared to do so. But now he hastily seized the three arrows and ran back, leaving the other contents scattered over the lodge. The swan was still there. With great precision he shot the first arrow and came very near the mark. The second came even closer. As he took the last arrow, he felt his arm go firmer. Drawing it back with all his strength, he let it go and saw it pass through the neck of the swan a little above the breast. Still, the bird did not appear injured. It waited a few moments, then slowly began to flap its wings. Gradually it rose into the air, flying off toward the sinking of the sun. Ojibwe started after it, running as fast as he could. As he rounded the lake, he spied several of the arrows he had shot from the opposite shore. Hastily he retrieved them and continued on. So great was his speed that he would shoot an arrow, catch up to it, and even pass it. Through deep woods, past lakes and streams, down valleys and over prairies, he ran toward the red sky in the west. Just before nightfall, after taking one last run, he began looking about for a place to rest. I can run fast, he thought, and tomorrow when the sun has risen I will sooner or later catch up to the swan. Emerging from the forest, he found himself in a large clearing. Farther on were lodges and sounds of men chopping wood. Tired though he was and in need of refreshment, the thought of the swan remained uppermost in his mind as he made his way toward the village. Drawing near, he heard the voice of the watchman crying, "We are visited!" He advanced, and the watchman directed him to the lodge of the chief. "It is there you must go in," he said, and left him. "Come in, come in, take a seat," said the chief, pointing to the side where his daughter sat. "It is there you must sit." They gave him food, and since he was a stranger, asked him but few questions, waiting for him to speak first. After dark, the chief said to his daughter, "Take our son-in-law's moccasins and see if they be torn. If so, mend them for him, and bring in his bundle." Ojibwe thought it strange that he should be so warmly received and given a wife so soon without his wishing it. It was some time, however, before she would take his moccasins. It displeased him to see her so reluctant, and when she did fetch them, he snatched them out of her hand and hung them up himself. He lay down and thought of the swan and made up his mind to be off by dawn. He awoke early and spoke to the young woman, but she gave no answer. He touched her lightly. "What do you want?" she asked. and she turned her back toward him. "Tell me what time the swan passed. I am following it. Come out and point the direction." "Do you think you can catch up to it?" she said. "You are foolish." Nonetheless, she went out and pointed the direction she thought he should go. Ojibwe set out slowly. When the sun had risen, he began to travel at his usual speed. He spent the day running, and when night came, he was unexpectedly pleased to find himself near another village. Again he heard a watchman crying out, "We are visited!" And soon the men of the village came out to see the stranger. He was again told to enter the lodge of the chief, and his reception was in every respect the same as the previous night, only that the young woman was more beautiful and received him very kindly. Although he was urged to stay, his mind remained fixed on the object of his journey. Before daylight, he asked the young woman what time the red swan had passed and to point out the way. She did, saying that it had passed the day before when the sun was between midday and Pungishimu, his falling place. Again he set out slowly, but when the sun had risen, he tried his speed by shooting an arrow ahead and catching up to it. On and on he ran, until toward nightfall he came to a small, low lodge. There was a light within. As he approached, he could see an old man sitting alone, warming his back at the fire. "Come in, my grandchild, and take a seat," he said. "Remove your things and dry them, for you must be fatigued, and I will prepare you something to eat." Ojibwe did as he was requested. When he had eaten, he leaned back and listened as the host began to speak. "Young man, the errand you are on is very difficult. Many young men have passed with the same purpose, but none have returned. The red swan you are following belongs to a certain magician who has sent her out over the earth in search of a young man of courage and great daring. A deep sadness, bringing shame and dishonor, has fallen upon him, and he seeks a deliverer to put an end to his suffering. It is well known in our land that the magician's power resides in a marvelous cap made entirely of wampum, which in former times he wore firmly attached to his scalp. But one day a party of warriors sent by an envious chief caught him off guard, snatched the scalp and made away with it, leaving his head bare and bloodied. Several years have passed and still his head has not healed. Meanwhile, the warriors go dancing from village to village, displaying their trophy, calling insults upon it and boasting of their own prowess. With every insult it receives, the magician groans with pain. Many a young man, such as yourself, has been enticed by the red swan in order to rescue the wampum scalp. Whoever is fortunate enough to succeed will receive the red swan herself as his reward. In the morning you will proceed on your way, and toward evening you will come to the magician's lodge. You have been chosen for your skill and your daring, never swerving in your determination. You have followed the swan faithfully, resisting the temptations offered you by hosts along the way. Go forward, my son, your heart is strong. I have a presentiment you will succeed." "I will try," said Ojibwe, and early the next morning he started off. Toward evening he came to the lodge just as he had been told, and heard the groans of the magician. Upon entering he was immediately made welcome. "You have traveled far," said the magician. "You must rest and take something to eat." Removing his leggings and moccasins, Ojibwe sat down beside the fire and looked around him. Strewn about the lodge were heavy furs, robes, brilliant feathers, strands of wampum, and other riches. Yet no sign of life save the magician himself, whose head still appeared bloodied from the loss of his scalp. On one side, however, Ojibwe could see the lodge was partitioned, and every now and then he heard a rustling noise. After he had taken some food, the old magician began to tell him about the lost scalp, how a band of warriors had stolen it, how they dishonored it and brought him great suffering. Then he told of the numerous unsuccessful attempts to regain it. When he had finished, Ojibwe lay down before the fire on a bed of robes that had been prepared for his use. In the solemn quiet of the dimly lit lodge, he gathered his thoughts and imagined the perils of the task that lay ahead of him. As he slept, he dreamed, and in his dream a hawk rose up from the forest. It circled in the air. Again it circled, and again and again. When he awoke, the magician was standing over him, ready to hand him his things and send him on his way. The sun had not yet risen. Without delay, he made his preparations, and soon he was off on his dangerous adventure. The path he took was remote from the lodgings of men. Not a soul did he encounter along the way. But toward the end of the day, about the time the sun hangs toward home, he heard the shouts of a great many people off in the distance. Looking ahead, he could see a clearing and several men. The closer he came, the more he saw. Still more came into view as he approached the opening, and as he emerged from the trees, their heads appeared as numerous as the hanging leaves. Tense with excitement, he made his way among them. Farther ahead, in the midst of the crowd, he could see a post and something waving on it, the scalp. Off and on, the air was filled with the sound of chanting as they danced around the post. The rush and hum of so many people was like the beating of waves after a storm. Suddenly, in the heat of the throng, he felt a quickening pulse in his arms. His body rose up. Transformed into a hawk, he soared past the heads of the warriors, causing them to jump aside in alarm. Then, with a terrifying scream, he swooped down on the scalp and tore it loose with his talons. The moment they saw what had taken place, they filled the air with the cries, "It is taken from us! It is taken from us!" Immediately, they set out in pursuit. But Ojibwe soared high above them and soon disappeared over the trees. Hearing the scream of the hawk, the magician stepped out of his lodge and began searching the sky for some sign of the young man's return. Soon Ojibwe appeared, and within a matter of moments he stood before his host, changed back to his usual form, holding the wampum scalp in his hands. With tremendous force he brought it down on the magician's head, dealing him a blow so severe that the old man's limbs shot out and quivered in agony. He sank to the ground and remained motionless for a long time, so long that it seemed he would not revive. At last he showed signs of life. His body stirred. He sat up. As he rose to his feet, Ojibwe beheld not an aged man, but one of the handsomest young men he had ever seen. "Thank you, my friend," he said. "You see that your kindness and bravery have restored me to my former self. It was so ordained, and you have accomplished the victory." Together they entered the lodge. The young magician urged Ojibwe to remain as his guest, and they soon established a warm friendship. Time elapsed, but still the magician did not speak of the Red Swan, nor was there any visible sign of her presence in the room where they sat. At last the moment arrived for Ojibwe to make preparations for his return. The magician repaid him for his kindness and bravery with gifts of wampum, robes, and all such things as would make him an influential man. But though his curiosity about the Red Swan was at its height, he controlled his feelings. On this subject he felt it would be improper to speak his mind, since the one he had rendered such a service to, whose hospitality he was now enjoying, and who had richly rewarded him, had never so much as mentioned it. His traveling pack was ready, and he was taking his leave, when the young magician at last spoke. "Friend, I know why it is that you have come so far. You have accomplished your mission and conferred a lasting obligation upon me. Your perseverance shall not go unrewarded. And if you undertake other things in the same spirit as this, you will always succeed. Though I would be happy to go with you, it is my duty to remain here. I have given you all you will need as long as you live. Your reluctance to speak of the Red Swan is most fitting. Yet I vow that whoever rescued my scalp should possess her." He then knocked on the partition. A door opened and the Red Swan appeared. She was a handsome young woman, and as she stood majestically before him, it would be impossible to describe her beauty, for she looked as if she did not belong on earth. "Take her," said the magician. "She is my sister. Treat her well. She is worthy of you. What you have done for me merits even more. She is ready to go with you to your kindred and friends, and it has been so ever since your arrival. My good wishes go with you both." The Red Swan looked upon her husband with admiration as he bid farewell to his friend. Together, bound by mutual trust and the promise of deep affection, they began the long journey home.